the one we had this week with I See You on Jeremy Kyle. That, I thought that was original. I've told you we need to know.
I've heard that before. But do you know what? I said to you both just you know before we recorded, why would you even admit to watching Jeremy Kyle?
As the transfer deadline day clock ticks down, it's the thought of Wembley creeping into the minds of Reading fans as a win over Walsall puts us just two wins away from another trip to the National Stadium. While our cup prospects are good, our Championship playoff hopes are even bleaker. But can tomorrow night's trip to Ipswich breathe the start of a memorable run to glory? We look ahead to another big week and discuss all the deadline day activity, or lack thereof, right here on the Tyler Sen Podcast, episode number 83. Hello and welcome. Thanks very much for hitting that download button once again. My name's Dan Wimbush, editor of thetylersen.com. And I'm joined this week by Mr. Alan West, otherwise known as Westy. Westy, hello.
Hello, everybody.
And Mr. Dave Handbags Harris. Dave, hello.
Back from the bench, hello.
Yep, you are. We've recruited it. We continue our system of rotation. Do you all feel fresh? Good from your weeks on the bench?
Very fresh.
Very, yeah.
Like it. I'm surprised you've still got any energy left after following the dramatic deadline day dealing so far.
Lack of, as you said earlier, alluded to.
We are recording this at 6:05, so I will eat my words if, after we finish recording, Reading kind of flurry of signings, but it doesn't look like it right now.
No, and to be fair to Reading, they normally get their business done before deadline day, and I think everyone's done that this year, and it seems pretty boring, and I feel sorry for the people at Sky after sitting there for 24 hours coming up with this turgid nonsense.
Well, there are some deals to be done, but it doesn't look like many are going to be done at the Wodeski Stadium anyway. But just before we move on, I said FA Cup progress to talk about in just a few moments' time. Before we do that, a very quick thank you to G. Megnuth, who is the latest person to kindly donate their money to our crowdfunding campaign. Again, thank you very much to everyone who has done so far. If you'd like to get involved, I said we are trying to improve the quality of this podcast each and every week, despite our unprofessional joke of a podcast crew.
Can we just call him G. Meg?
We'll call him G-Meg.
Sounds pretty cool.
Cheers, G-Meg. He has stumped up some of his hard-earned cash, and thank you very much to him. If you would like to do the same, you can follow the link. It is in the post that accompanies this podcast on thetylersden.com. Or if you've got any questions, just drop us an email to thetylersden@gmail.com. In the meantime, let's talk over that 4-0 win over Walsall.
View from the Tylersden.
Recapping this week's Championship action.
Gentlemen, what is it about Reading and the FA Cup? We've not been beaten at home now for over 4 years. Now, there's a stat for you. Okay, we've only played about 4 games since then. But that's not the point. We extended that run with a comprehensive 4-0 win over Walsall. Coming into this game, you thought, doing well in League One, third in the table, Reading not doing so well. Obviously, Walsall with that bit of a hoodoo over us in cup competitions and playoffs as well. But Dave, this was relatively easy. I was surprised at just how comfortable this one was.
In the end, yes. The first half an hour wasn't particularly easy. It was quite difficult to watch. Also had a lot of the ball without actually creating too much. They had the one chance, didn't they? In the end, once you got the first goal, once we got the first goal, I can't really say that there was only ever going to be one winner once we got that. Obviously, it was pretty crucial turning point that we got the second goal so quickly, which absolutely knocked the stuffing out of them. They didn't have a chance second half, really.
Not at all. An interesting formation again, Westy. No, you weren't at the game, but just looking at that team sheet, again, no real natural wingers. They had Hal Robson Canoe on the pitch, but employing the likes of Stephen Quinn, Aaron Tischbowler came back from injury, unfortunately, only lasted around 10 minutes while hobbling off with what Brian McDermott is fearful is another hamstring injury for him, alongside, obviously, Oliver Norwood in there. Not a lot of width. Can you sort of see the logic behind going with so many central-minded players?
Well, it ended up being fruitful for them, so I don't think we can really debate it too much now. But I would say that I think probably with Quinn and Tischbowler, he was probably given some match time and he had to fit him in where he could. And we know Quinn's played left side quite a bit anyway in more recent matches, so I don't think it didn't affect us all long run. But what was worrying me more is at the start of the season, Reading seemed to come flying out the blocks and blow teams away. And now we seem to have taken half hour, 40 minutes to even get going in matches, which has been a common theme in the last couple of weeks.
Well, the one good thing is they didn't concede any doors. Obviously, Dave mentioned they did have a good chance early on, did Walsall. But apart from that, it was a relatively quiet day for Aleo Habsi. Apparently, there was a bit of a change to the pre-match training routine. They were doing shadow drills as well on the pitch. It was picked up by Tim Deller, who questioned Brian about it. And Brian said, basically, we can't afford to keep starting us slowly anymore. So it looks like they're trying to address that point, at least. But the man who eventually breaks the deadlock is a player who absolutely loves the FA Cup. Hal Robson Canoe, gentlemen, his last 5 goals have all been in the FA Cup. Now, you could sit there and say, well, pull your finger out and start scoring some league goals. But by the same token, if he drives us to Wembley again, he'll leave Reading probably not a hero, but at least with a mild, warm handshake.
Did anyone listen to Sean O'Driscoll's interview after the match?
Can't say I did.
But what he said basically was, he said that we was in the game until Reading scored, and he said the difference between this league and League One is three of them goals wouldn't have happened in League One, and I think the first one he alluded to definitely wouldn't have been a goal that would have been scored in that division. And it just goes to show you that in more recent times, I mean, Bristol City have struggled since they come up after running away with the league, but it's looking like there's a massive gap now between League One and the Championship.
MK Dons as well.
Yeah, they're both struggling.
Rotherham from a couple of seasons ago. That's the point that I was thinking about a little bit earlier, preparing for the show, is that that gap is definitely there. And I think the only team really that have made any, or two teams that have made any inroads into the Championship are both Brentford and Wolves.
Yeah, he's basically
over recent years.
He basically alluded to the fact that, that we might be playing in this league next year, and that's how good you have to be able to compete. And I think we've found the same thing when we've been in the Premier League, where we've been in games, but we can't kill them off or don't take the chances when they come. And it's looking like the same sort of situation between League One and the Championship nowadays.
Yeah, you wonder how much the loss of George Evans has impacted their midfield, because they didn't really seem to have a lot going in the engine room, did Walsall. But yeah, that Haraldson Canoe goal, great turn and finish in at the near post. It did come really out of nowhere. Reading had a lot of opportunities up to that point. It was a really dull sort of game. You never... Just struggled to get going, but Howell scores that goal, and a couple of minutes later, Matty Vidra pops it in 2-0, and that really was game over. I sat there at half time and I was chatting to a couple of other Tarlhurst Enders behind the back of the East Stand, and I was just saying, I don't really know what to say about that, because I didn't see a massive response coming from Walsall, and yet I also didn't see Reading really going guns out to try and win 3-4-0. Thought that was job done.
That was exactly it throughout the whole game, wasn't it? It was. You look at the scoreline and you think, yeah, they're absolutely dominant, but we weren't. Certainly for the first half an hour, 40 minutes, we weren't totally dominant at all. But by the same token, we've won 4-0, and it probably should have been more.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Reading do. They very rare, even the Ipswich game, where we won 5-1, I didn't think that was a 5-1. I think Reading picked them off brilliantly in that game. They've just got away sometimes that when they click that they do it. But again, we're still waiting to see Reading absolutely overwhelm an opponent.
No, yeah, we do. We haven't seen it all season. And again, there's consistency again. We can blow teams away all of a sudden. We obviously had us, we went down 10 men more recently. But we can blow teams away, and we've done it throughout the season in little spells in Ipswich and this game. But we can't do it consistently. And then we'll go two or three games without scoring. You think, I don't understand how that happens.
Matty Vidra, Dave. Player who has continued to divide opinion amongst Reading fans. I know Johnny, who's conspicuous by his absence today, gave Matty Vidra a 6 out of 10 in the Tull SM player ratings.
Oh, I thought that was outrageous.
I thought it was very outrageous as well. We're going to tear into him because he's not here to defend himself. His argument was that basically he missed some chances, and he did miss it. After he scored, he had a great one-on-one chance that he put wide. That is slightly worrying for me about Vidra, his one-on-ones. You know, he missed one at the MK Dons as well. You can tell he's not quite there confidence-wise.
Yeah, he snatched at it. And then, obviously, he took the one off Williams at the end, which was just hilarious in its complete ineptitude. I've got no problems with Vidra. I thought he played extremely well. He does struggle to get into games. That's the nature of a striker who is on the shoulder of the last defender. Mm. He's always, you watch his movement. If you take a look at him for 5 minutes of a game and just follow him, he's on the shoulder of the last defender and he's always looking for the through ball. That's all he ever does.
Yeah.
He's not getting that here, which is a reason why he's struggling a little bit. He's not getting as many chances as he possibly should do. But, he still knows where the back of the net is. He scored another two on Saturday to go with the three that he scored against Huddersfield and the one that he should have scored against Sheffield Wednesday with the penalty. He keeps getting in the right areas. Goals will come.
Absolutely, tend to agree. As I said, I can absolutely understand why Johnny's given him a 6 out of 10. I don't agree with it. I don't think many people do. But it's his ratings party. And as with everything on the Tarlhurst end, that's why we write it, so you can have your say. But Wesley, suddenly he's top goal scorer in the FA Cup with
yeah,
6 goals.
I think he's starting to find a way to play. I think before he had a system at Watford, like you're saying, he's on the shoulder of players. And I think a lot of the time, if you do watch him, you think that's a great run if someone just spotted it, and they don't seem to be able to do that consistently anyway. But now he's putting the ball in the net. He does miss chances, but he's in a position to score, and that's half the battle half the time. So he's putting the ball in the net now. I think Vidra's a very good player on his day. Unfortunately, if he doesn't have a good day, he does tend to show up quite a bit. if we're not winning, and that's what's been happening.
Where does Jan Kermagant fit in, Dave, for you? Because obviously he's not been signed to sit on the bench. If he was happy to sit on the bench, he would have probably stayed at Bournemouth. But they've just won 4-0. Where do you see him fitting in that team?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because even though Danny Williams scored and played a lovely through ball for the second goal, it's so abundantly obvious he's not a number 10. And so I'd be playing in where Danny Williams is. Obviously, Tish Bowler's now out injured, so Danny Williams quite naturally fits slots back to where Tish Bowler was.
So what, have Kermagant leading the line, Vidra playing where Williams was? Or
Kermagant where Williams was.
Okay, so dropping back deep.
Yep.
Okay.
And have Vidra on the shoulder of the last defender. I think Kermagant has proven time and again with the three championship clubs that he's played for that he can play that role.
I think they'd be excellent together. I think they, but when you watch both of them individually, their games seem to look like they're going to suit one another, and I think that's what McDermott's seen in the first place, because he's a player that you can hit, and I think it'd be excellent for Reading.
The only thing I'd say, and the one negative, if it is to be called a negative, I mean, it was generally a day full of positives, but for me, I still don't know what the best Reading team is. I still don't think Brian McDermott knows what the best Reading team is.
I don't think anyone knows what the best Reading team is.
And it'll be very, very interesting to see what team he plays up at Ipswich tomorrow night. Obviously, we'll come on to that in just a few moments. But the good news is, as I said, we are in the fifth round. We're two wins away from Wembley. And I can confirm I have not booked any nuptials for this semi-final weekend. So
it's my birthday weekend.
Oh, well, there you go. We'll do it for Dave.
I don't think that's going to stop you going, though, is it, Dave?
No, it's not.
I wouldn't have thought so.
No?
I felt that'd be present enough, I'd have thought.
Absolutely.
It'd be a cheap day out for you. You get points everywhere.
I'll get a free, a lot of free stuff. No doubt I'll probably end up with a free ticket as well.
Well, hey, there you go. Anyway, two games away. You can do it, lads. But the next step on the road to Wembley will be against either Peterborough or West Brom. Peterborough doing get a good result, really. 2-2 draw up at the Hawthorns.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, you mentioned earlier that we hadn't lost at home in the FA Cup for about 4 years. Who was the last manager to do that?
Brian McDermott.
Opposition.
Oh, whoever was the Stevenage manager at the time.
Graham Wesley, who's the Peterborough manager.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah. Charles, wasn't it? Darius Charles?
I believe so, yes.
Getting the goal for Stevenage.
Scored for them in the home game the season before. Yeah.
It was a nice draw for Reading, I thought. Either team, you'd have fancied them to beat at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially West Brom with the situation there and in the league. You've got to think that this is, if they get through the replay, that is, which will be a difficult task as well. Peterborough obviously Reading as well. They've just lost a former Reading target in Connor Washington. So they're not at full strength. They've not had a great season either. So, again, you win that in the quarterfinals all of a sudden. And again, you're one good draw away. And there are a fair few, especially with City drawing Chelsea as well. That's another big gun who's going to be knocked out.
The thing is, when I look at Reading, I think anyone, if they play anyone at home, I would fancy them to get a result.
Except Arsenal.
Yeah, except for Arsenal, yeah. But anyone, in general, when you look at the rest of the teams that would be left in the competition, you'd think I'd fancy Reading at home to beat anyone on their day.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Absolutely. Well, we'll have to see how that goes. That was a bit of a fixture pile-up as well, build-up for Reading. A few fair long-distance away trips on the cards. I think we've now got Middlesbrough on a Tuesday night. I can almost hear Charles Watts groaning from here at the prospect of that one. So we'll obviously bring you up to date.
If he doesn't want to do it, I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'll take his wage for the day and travel up to Middlesbrough and report on it.
I reckon you do it without the wage, just to get the free ticket.
I don't think they'll be charging you too much. Right, anyway, we'll preview that, obviously, when it comes around. In the meantime, as I said, it is deadline day. We'll recap all of the news so far in News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Are you all sitting comfortably in your yellow ties, yellow suits, all ready for that deadline day hype? Well, if you are and you're a Reading fan, you've been let down, because the club has done absolutely nothing so far at the time of recording. I said it's about 20 past six now. A few rumours bubbling around at the start of the day, mostly surrounding exits. There were reports that Danny Williams might be heading to Swansea and Jake Cooper could be on the move to Crystal Palace. Neither materialised. On the in front, Tom Bradshaw, that link was shot down a few days before by Brian McDermott, but Walsall confirmed earlier today that he is staying at the club. Couple of other, Bradley Dack from Gillingham, again, it looks like he might be moving, but it doesn't seem like it. But Reading, it looks like Ipswich are leading the race there, so we could well see him tomorrow night. And the other one was a bit left field for me, Julian Speroni. The veteran 36-year-old Crystal Palace goalkeeper. Apparently there was a link in there, but Alan Pardew quickly shut that down at lunchtime because he says he's letting Alex McCarthy go out on loan. Reading, not one of the teams thought to be in the frame for him. It looks like he'll be off to Fulham, if anywhere. And that, gentlemen, is about it. And I said to you just before we came on air, I think this could quite possibly be the most boring deadline day we have ever had. Any disagreements?
I don't think we can disagree with that at the moment.
Because usually, at least we've had like, even on the worst days when we've just been like scared of losing our players, there's been like tension there. But Danny Williams was shot down within about 45 minutes of the rumour being floated. And apart from that, it's just been meh.
Oh, that's complaining.
I think, again, if when you look at it from a Reading's point of view, I think financially they've done all right out of the transfer window again. I mean, they've replaced the players, they've let go, and they've made a few quid out of the proceeds, really.
Yeah, well, let's look at the window as a whole very quickly then. Dave, Reading sold three players. Since we last talked, Orlando Saar has gone to Maccabi Haifa, and Paulo Tardo has joined.
Vitória de Guimarães, I think they
were. Oh, there you go. You're a better man than I.
He's gone back to Portugal, let's just say that.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, he's gone to Portugal. He is left on a loan deal until the end of the season, so he's not gone permanently. Orlando Saar has gone permanently. We think the fee's around about 600 grand or so, so maybe a slight loss for Reading. But obviously Nick Blackman as well, going for 3.5 to 4 million as well. So Reading raking in, best part of 4 million. On the spending front, I think they spent about 500,000 on Kermigant. George Evans was a free, and third man, Dennis Rackles, was about 500,000 as well. So they made about 3 million profit. Are you happy with the dealings this transfer window, Dave?
Yeah, pretty happy. I mean, the big one, obviously, was Nick Blackman, and I think that solves quite a conundrum, because you just don't know where to play him. And he totally unbalances, completely unbalances the side, as far as I'm concerned, and as Derby are finding out right now. Look on their message boards, they're you could almost transpose it to Hobnob. It's really quite funny. Atardo going on loan, it's got to be a good move all around. He's not really had a look in. He's looked neat and tidy in the sporadic minutes that I've seen, but you know, he hasn't really set the world alight. And by all accounts, he's struggled to settle completely. Best thing for all concerned is to go back to Portugal and regain some happiness and confidence, you know.
Yeah, apparently Orlando Saar was doing his translating for him, so obviously that one's not going to go well with Saar making an exit a day or so before. Westy, what about you? You happy with the three they've brought in?
Yeah, I think you've got to be happy. I know the guy from Poland's a little bit of a gamble, but at 400,000-500,000, it's not a gamble, is it? I mean, at 23, it's a good age. You're scoring in Poland. I think for 400,000-500,000, you just don't get players for that sort of price in this country at any level, really. So if he turns out to be a good one, then great. If he doesn't, then I don't think they've lost anything. As for the guy from Bournemouth, I think he's better than Saar anyway, so I think that's an improvement. And the young lad, when I see him the other day, looked a bit like a rabbit caught in the headlights, but he's still a young lad and he's got plenty of improvement in him. Yeah, and he comes with a good pedigree. So again, there's no risk. They're no risk signings, are they, any of them?
No, not at all.
I said the only risk that I would say that there is the possibility of Dennis Rackles getting about 4 red cards in a season, which is exactly what he looks like.
Are you saying he looks like a thug, Dave?
Yes, I am.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, sorry, maybe we need someone to put himself about a bit.
He looks a friendly chap, really. There was a photo of Bushwatch extraordinaire Jacob Southclyde with him earlier. He almost broke into a smile. That's Rackles rather than JSK. You can follow his Bushwatch antics. He's been at it again. I think he's just given up for the day, though.
Yeah.
I think Nick Hammond apparently came up and said, "Nothing's happening today, mate.
Go home.
Go home." It's a shame. You know, he's been there all day. So credit. I'll give you your credit here. JSK, well done, well done. Yeah, I think they're three sensible transfers. I think Evans is a great one for the future. Obviously, he comes with a very high pedigree. He's recommended by a lot of people in the game. And Reading haven't paid haven't had to pay a transfer fee for him.
No, it's no risk. I mean, if they let him go in 2 years, they might end up getting £500,000 for him if he doesn't turn out to be any good. But again, he's still young, he's still learning, and he'll get his chance. And when he takes it, when he gets it, let's hope he takes it.
The only real controversy, Dave, of this window was the fact that Rackles, Brian McDermott openly came out and said in his press conference that Rackles wasn't my signing. Well, he wasn't one that he picked out to the owners. The owners picked him out to him and sort of signed him, basically. Have you got any problems with the ownership doing that?
I have a little bit. I'm much, much more comfortable with a manager making a recommendation to sign than the other way around. Let's face it, McDermott's there to manage. McDermott's there to build a team, and he's got to be the one who's got to say that this is the player that I want. Having said that, you know, if he turns out to be all right, then who can really complain? But so long as the owners don't do this all the time, then you know, if he does turn out all right, then fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only concern with it is if they're signing players or they're recommending players that they sign, and they're not playing, does that put pressure on the manager to put them in the team? We don't know, but it's not an unusual system nowadays. but it is unusual at clubs like Reading and Huddersfield.
Yeah, Brian said himself, it's 21st century football, and if you think it, you know, it goes any other way, then you're living in the past. I mean, the very fact that he said that both Kermigan and Evans were his signings, that gives me confidence. That gives me the confidence that it's not just, he's not being fed all of these players and he's just got to deal with it.
Well, the point is, we're short of strikers and they brought one in for pennies, really. He's a good age to improve and get better. So, like I said earlier, it's low risk, and if it doesn't work out, don't work out.
I'm sure if you ask Brian McDermott in his heart of hearts, and he'll never say in public, he would have wanted Connor Washington.
Oh, probably.
He would have wanted Connor Washington, and he probably would have had Tom Bradshaw. But for whatever reason, whether it's the owners don't think it's value, I mean, $2.5 million, let's be honest, for Connor Washington, who went to QPR, is a lot of money for a man who's done it for half a season at League One level. Yeah. So you can understand why they're not keen to risk it. It's very, very obvious at this stage, if you've not got the picture by now, that this Thai ownership group is not splashing the cash. This is basically in the same model that John Medeski ran the club. And they said that from day one, to be fair to them. If you're sat here expecting Reading to suddenly go out and spend $10 million on a Ross McCormack or a Jordan Rhodes,
it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah, which is exactly, well, not exactly what happened with Zingarevich, but certainly the signings that were bestowed on McDermott and Adkins were bank breakers.
Yeah.
It also makes you wonder who else came for Clark who wasn't his signings. Was Atado signing? Was Sarri signing? We don't know, but it would seem that from the countries that they come from, probably they weren't.
No, they've probably been identified and again put on the manager, but again, you don't know. At the end of the day, look, if Dennis Rackles comes in and scores 10 goals for the rest of the season and proves to be a real bargain, everyone will be happy. If he goes out and flops, again, like you said, Westy, he's cost 500 grand and no one's going to think of it.
No, and also McDermott's distanced himself from the fact if he does flop,
hasn't
he?
Yeah, that's
true. He said it's not my signing, so maybe he thinks he will.
Yeah, we'll have to see how that one pans out. Anyway, as I said, it's only about 6:30, so there is 4.5 hours left of the transfer deadline. So by the time we put this out on the internet, Reading could have gone out and signed 2 or 3 players. But for the meantime, that is the business done. Obviously, we'll keep you updated right throughout the evening on thetarlhurstend.com. In the meantime, it's time to move on to Pub Chat.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So let's move away from transfers and the on-the-pitch action, gents, for just a few moments. Today's pub chat is going to be concerned on the general sort of atmosphere and the experience at the Medeski Stadium and being a Reading fan. Mr. Handbags Harris is going to lead this one. Dave, would you like to tee up why this pub chat has come about?
Yeah, a week ago there was a meeting held at the club with a number of individuals from within the club, with the Supporters Trust at Reading representatives and invited fans in order to attempt to boost the atmosphere at the ground. It's not gone unnoticed by our Thai owners that the atmosphere is somewhat tepid, to say the least, the majority of times. And so they've been banging on within the club to say we want the atmosphere increased. And so the club have got a focus group together, of which I was an invitee. And went in, discussed the what things can happen and what the club can do. Majority of stuff that's been discussed, I mean, set the scene somewhat. The first thing to say is that the club recognise that anything that gets initiated is going to be put to me quite brilliantly earlier, that there has to be organic. It has to be fan-driven, it has to be led by fans. And the club absolutely recognised that, and that was one of the first things that was stated in the first meeting back in August. So, and the club are looking to assist where they can and get pulled along by fans, as it were, rather than the club trying to pull fans, which ultimately has completely flopped in the past.
Yeah, if you think back to the clap banners, the song sheets, rumble sticks...
It's interesting you say that. The song sheets, they apparently were not anything to do with the club. That wasn't even Star either. By all accounts, that was a single fan who thought it would be a good idea, who had them printed and Star and asked Star to hand them out.
Fair enough.
So Star were quite happy to do that. But it didn't go down particularly well because we all know the mentality of a football fan is if you want to chant and sing a song, you learn the words yourself.
If you get a piece of paper, you turn it into a plane as well.
Right, so a few sort of key points. Obviously, you can read a full write-up of this on thetarlhurstend.com. We are very much keen on your feedback. Use the hashtag TTE Focus Group. Dave's sort of collating all the response in. Also, you can send your emails into thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. We'll make sure they get along to Dave as well. But Dave, some of the key points to come out of it that I picked out from it was... the big thing about the club trying to engage the 18 to 24 group.
Yes, they've recognised over the years that they've somewhat neglected those. Not just those. I mean, they had the people that they generally took for granted, in mainly in sort of Y24, 5 and 6. It was taken for granted that they were going to turn up, spend their money, create an atmosphere, and they didn't really need to worry about them and do anything for them. They recognise that that's completely the wrong approach to take. 18 to 24, again, they recognise, you know, things like, you know, cost of living, it's not exactly getting cheaper to live. And so one of the things that they've done to help is obviously introduce the lower ticket in price for them. Yeah, they're really looking for 18 to 24 4-year-olds to ideally congregate in the Y24 to 26 area, because ultimately, who's the most likely person or people, demographic of people, to start chants and sort of have a bit of a boisterous time?
So an unofficial sort of singing zone?
A kind of, yeah, in some ways. I mean, obviously, we know why 24 to 26, that sort of south end of the East Stand, has always been the area to go if you want to have a bit of a sing-song, if you want to get into a bit of banter with the away fans. So, you know, the club basically want to, they're really looking to help those people. They want to give those, you know, people who want to sit there, they want to engage, they want to take part, and they want to get people on board. They want to get suggestions, ideas. I'd say literally what it is. It's a forum of ideas together to for people to
help produce more atmosphere, yeah, exactly. and get more engaged. And I noticed one of the ideas that was floated at the meeting was to move the drummer, who's obviously been a little bit of an isolated figure in that northeast corner for a little bit, and some suggestions to move him.
Yes, it's interesting, because on Saturday I sat in Y26. I didn't see it in Y26 at all. I sat in the upper west.
I know, you moved away from me. I was wondering where you were. I thought I smelt or something. I mean, I probably do, but
I actually went with my brother, and my brother decided he wanted to sit in the upper west. I was quite happy to help with that, because it didn't cost any more than normal. I took it as an opportunity to actually take a look at the East Stand. Yes, all right, the crowd was sort of 3,000 or 4,000 lower than normal, but you look at it and you just see, you know, the south end and the halfway line of the East Stand is almost pretty much chock full. 26, 25, 24, 23, 22 is probably, you know, sort of three quarters full. And then, you know, you look up into the drummer, and do you know what I didn't even realise was that there's three drummers up there.
Yeah, I haven't heard them for a while. I can't remember, because usually you get the dum, dum, blah, mate, and I've not even heard that for ages.
Yeah, there were a few people, the drummer was, it was quite audible in the Upper West. And it was noticeable that there were a few people in the North Stand who were joining in, but it was all a bit kind of sort of ghostly.
Yeah,
it was almost a bit.
Well, it doesn't carry, because he's on his own, isn't he? I mean, exactly, there's not a lot of people exactly. near him.
So for me, I've always been an advocate of it. I think it always helps, and I think there are some clubs around who actually utilise their drummers extremely well. For me, it's always been he's been in a position, unless we have a full stadium with a rocking atmosphere during good times, looking back about 10 years now, there's no real point to him being in the northeast corner. So I'd be one, and my personal preference is to have him on the halfway line, so that you can engage with all of the East Stand, and get everybody in time, and get, you know, get the whole stand going to the same chant, if at all possible. I still fail to see why they need three drummers, because there's only one that you can hear.
Well, again, that's probably partly due to the fact that the noise isn't coming, so maybe they're thinking of boosting the acoustics. The obvious thing that a lot of people will point out and say to answer and cure the atmosphere issues is bring in safe standing. Now, I think I speak for all of us here. I think we're all broadly behind it. Here, we've discussed this on previous podcasts. It's been a cause championed by John Keane over on thetarlesend.com in the past, and the Football Supporters Federation very much leading the fight to bring it back into the game. Obviously, it's not legal at the moment, so there's mm-hmm. nothing that the club can do. But, Dave, you brought up the topic at the meeting. What did they have to say about it? Were they receptive?
They are receptive. They do want to do it. If the government bring in or repeal the laws that are currently there to stand, they would like to do it. But, of course, the economic argument is not going to go away. I find it extremely frustrating that the first argument that Ray Booth brought up was an economic argument.
Ray Booth is?
He's the stadium manager.
Okay.
He brought up an economic argument straight away, saying that, you know, first and foremost, if there's a scheme that is introduced that turns out to be far too costly, you know, costs millions and millions and millions of pounds to introduce, The club aren't going to do it, particularly in the Championship, simply because we're not selling out and there's no appetite for it. I don't necessarily buy into that, because I think that if you introduce a safe standing area into the Malaysia, I think it would sell out, and I think it'll sell out every single game in the Championship, dependent on size. But I'm looking at it from a north stand perspective, maybe the top half or the middle three blocks. Again, as I say, I think it would sell out, no problem at all. But if the economics aren't right, then the club simply won't do it.
Okay, a couple of other points to come out of it as well. And one, a fellow that has been brought up a few times on this podcast in the past, a chap by the name of DJ Megaparty.
Oh, yes.
He got a mention at the meeting, Dave.
Was anti-atmosphere.
what did the club's management have to say about Mr. Megaparty?
The long and short of it is that he's here to stay.
Good. At least some are decent come out of this focus group.
I think I speak for everybody. All the fans on the forum when I mentioned it, they were unanimous literally. Oh, sort of head in hand kind of thing. He is here to stay. That's not going to. He's not going to go away. The club are actively taking on board feedback that they've received outside of the forum, and they're certainly taking on board feedback from within the forum. They say that he is approachable. He's someone who can change his mentality and his approach. And I think in many ways he's taken that on board because he was a lot better on Saturday. It was a lot more down, not downbeat, but
you didn't hear a lot of it
in the background. I still fail to see why the whole sort of back the boys, make some noise thing needs to happen. Apparently it whips up the crowd. He's there to stay. You've got to if you don't like him, you just got to tolerate him. If you really don't like him, even after he's changed his ways, then the only thing I can say is feed it back, and I'll congregate all of the feedback and I'll pass it on to the club at the next meeting, which should be sort of around May time.
And I will personally go around everyone else and get them to back him all the way. Because for every one complaint he gets, there's 100 people that love him, I'm sure.
Really?
Well, apparently...
No. Really?
Apparently, let's say the commercial director, Adam Benson, has said that they've received a lot of positive feedback for him. So,
For DJ Megaparty's mum,
the silent majority, the silent majority.
You've got to take his words at face value. If he's received that, then fair enough.
Listen, anyone who calls himself DJ Megaparty, you've got to be worried about straight away. But I must admit, I know he's bad, but he's so bad that I actually quite enjoy him.
He's, as Dave said, look, he's getting a bit better.
I tell you what, if he was in America, they'd love him.
Yeah, and apparently he does the Bracknell Bees as well, and apparently they love him.
I bet they do.
So, and you can tell he's got that sort of...
This is football, though, so you've got to remember it's totally different.
I think Reading fans are frightened of change, that's half the problem.
Well, I'm never...
DJ Megaparty.
I'm never an advocate of seeing anybody lose their job, as long as they are prepared to try and improve if they've got flaws. And as Dave said, apparently if he's taken on the criticisms and opinions of people... Good for him. I said he has toned it down a bit. It's not quite as bad as it was right at the start of the season. So fair play to him. Dave, any other points? I notice another big thing that people constantly talk about is contactless payment and being able to pay on card and stuff in the stadium. Any moves on that?
Yeah, so that was brought up by the chap from Compass within the meeting. They have looked at it. They've done a full site survey, full stadium survey. They looked at introducing contactless payments for every till. They looked at contactless payment, introducing one contactless payment terminal at every kiosk. The difference is about 50 grand. But the actual price, he didn't actually reveal the actual price of introducing the new electronic point of sale. Yeah. But apparently it was eye-watering.
Oh, really?
But I think
we can't expect to see it anytime soon.
You say that. I think there are plans afoot to introduce it next season. That was just what I'm insinuating.
Right.
That wasn't anything that actually came from... That was explicitly said in the meeting. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Well, when I went to the MK Dons, they've got it, and it was really handy. Made the queue go really quick, even though it was a huge snaking queue.
Yeah, there's a dreadful slow process of getting stuff at halftime that could have been sped up a long time ago.
Yeah.
I don't understand how you can have coffees lined up and still have a massive queue. How difficult is it to get coffees sold? You know what I mean?
People now start going down to halftime about 10 minutes to go in the first half.
You have to make sure you get the second half.
Okay, so anything else, any other big points you wanted to bring up? As I said, the full write-up is on thetarlesden.com, so if you do want to read the thoughts in full and leave your feedback there, please do. But anything else that popped out?
Nothing particularly that he's discussing here. I think the only thing I would say is thanks to everybody so far who got back to me. As Wim suggested earlier, the place to get in contact is either on Twitter. The hashtag is TTE Focus Group. Obviously, email in to thetarlesden@gmail.com. And Wim has forwarded a number of emails to me so far. So, Azem, Mark and Arthur, I have received your emails, and I do intend to respond to you personally. Obviously, with the number of tweets that we get as well, it's not always possible to reply to each and every single one of them. But they are extremely handy. And any points, I will happily congregate and collate and feed back to the club.
Did anyone mention overzealous stewarding at any point?
Funny you should mention that. One of the chaps who it was, I haven't written it down, so my apologies, but that was mentioned, I think it was in one of the emails. And again, it's something that I'll feed back to the club. The chap sits in Y26, was complaining about overzealous stewarding. You know, standing is tolerated in Y24, 5, 6 now, particularly in Y25, towards the back. The last 4 or 5 years, it's been tolerated. I have to say, I've not sort of witnessed the stewarding specifically in Y26 because I've always sat in Y25. I don't know if there's a difference in approach. This guy he has mentioned that the stewarding was overzealous. The moment you stand up, within sort of two or three minutes, you get told to sit down. That used to happen in Y25 all the time. It used to grind my gears, something chronic, but it certainly doesn't happen anymore. Not in Y25 anyway. But again, you know, I'll happily feed it forward. And see what can come of it.
I do genuinely believe that the club have only got themselves to blame on this issue, because it wasn't that long ago. I think, was it last season, when one of the guys was sort of sat where I sit, Y23, 22, in that sort of area, and him and his mate, they were a little bit worse for wear drink wise. But
I remember this story.
They definitely was rocking up the crowd, and all three of them were thrown out.
Yeah. Nottingham Forest.
There's obviously specific instances and things.
But it's not the first occasion. But yeah. I've sat at stadiums and I've seen people who have had a little bit too much to drink. All right, they're a bit raucous. They whip up any sort of atmosphere and they're whipped out of the stadium. So if the club are making focus groups, they've got themselves to blame, I'm afraid.
In many ways, yes, they have. I absolutely agree. And certainly, Azam, who I mentioned earlier, who sent an email in, he was part of the group that tried to form a new sort of informal sort of atmosphere.
Is it the Berkshire Boys or something?
I can't remember what they were called.
But yeah, I was there that day when they tried to whip that up. It's when I first started the podcast.
Up in the Upper West, wasn't it?
And we were surrounded by stewards within 5 minutes.
Yeah. I was aware of it. I wanted to take part in it, but you know, based on the fact that it was in the Upper West, and we have had enough problems in Y25 back then.
Well, what happened was, because there was one of the first shows we ever done that was when they contacted us, and we got involved in that, and the club backed them to a certain extent, and they put them in the corner.
Yeah.
And as soon as anyone started singing, and I'd be a liar to say that somebody didn't use the odd FLC, right? And as soon as any of that happened, they were surrounded, the ringleaders were kicked out, and that was the end of it. Mm-hmm. So, again, the club have only got themselves to blame.
Well, that's certainly an argument that holds true for a lot of people. But all I'll say is, obviously, what's happened in the past has now happened in the past. We're trying to look at the future, trying to get some changes made, obviously. And the best way to do that, if you agree with Westy, we agree with Dave or myself or whoever, get those opinions in. The more emails we get in, the more feedbacks, the more things Dave can point out saying, I've got 30, 40, 50 fans saying the same thing, the stronger your argument is. Yep. If you're just sat there nodding away, and, you know, fair enough, it's great that you're sat there nodding away, but unless you get in touch with us...
Not only that, Wim, it's also the fact that now you have to sit... Because there's a seated stadium. It wasn't like when you was at the South Bank when you could congregate with your mates.
No. Yep.
Like, for example, I've got three young boys that come with me, and I'm lucky if I can get them sat within two or three seats of me if I want to sit where I normally sit. So it's not going to happen generically, because you can't make it happen generically. No. I can't get 10 of my mates together to sit with me. It's not going to happen. It won't happen. Not only that, there's an ageing fan base now. Yeah, it's an aging fan base, and they don't want to sing; they just want to sit and watch a match.
And that's part of the reason why they introduced the 18 to 24 age bracket with ticketing, to try and bring that age group back in to try and sort of at least attempt to try and conjure up the atmosphere.
But no, but you can't get them together. That's the thing; you can't get 10 mates together unless you're going to go and sit.
And these are all things that hopefully they're having a look at. Hopefully they're going to make it easier for you to switch seats. Hopefully they're going to make it so that when you buy a ticket, you are more or less directed to the right zone. So. Again, I can't defend the club for everything. I barely defend them at all these days. But
I think the only thing you can do is when it comes to the end of the season, right? But it's going to upset some fans because you're going to say, right, this is going to be the area where we want people to be singing. So if you buy a ticket in this area, we're expecting you to get behind the team. And that will force people to be in a group of 50, 100 people.
Yeah,
that's the only way you can do it.
It's something that I've written down here that, you know, the whole sort of engaging people who want to create an atmosphere, obviously that's not going to engage everybody. The club, they've openly come out now and basically said they want to create an atmosphere, though. So it may mean that some people are inconvenienced if they don't want to wish to take, or if they don't wish to take part. In which case, the only thing I can say is, you know, maybe the club could offer an incentive to those people to maybe move elsewhere in the stadium or you know, if you don't want to take part and open up, say, if you are in Y24, 5 and 6 and you do sit there listening rather than engaging, then maybe you know, the whole point is to move.
I think that's the only thing you can do. I have a whole section, maybe Y26, where everyone is expected to be singing. If you're in there, then that's what's going to happen. Get used to the idea, and people don't want to do it, then fine, move. But you can't do it any other way.
Well, just before we move on then, I mean, it's great. We could go on this for a long time. It's almost a topic in itself. But just before we move on, Dave, just very quickly, there have been a few schemes that they have launched already. Mm-hmm. Be amiss not just to pick up on a few of those things, like the fan zone, the Royals Rendezvous fan zone and stuff. So to prove that things that are discussed in these meetings do actually come about. So a couple of things, namely a couple of things that have come about.
Well, I'd say the fan zone is the major one. I mean, there was already an idea in the pipeline, but it was just added to by people significantly within the first meeting. So you know, first and foremost, the name. They didn't have a name for it. It was suggested, I think, by Paula Martin, chair of Star. Why not call it the Royals Rendezvous? Harking back to the old Elm Park days, the Supporters Club bar just outside the South Bank. Funnily enough, it's been called the Royals Rendezvous. They've introduced a permanent structure. So you've got cover. They've introduced bolt-on patio heaters. So you've got warmth there. There are plans afoot to introduce TVs into the area so you can watch the early kickoff.
Although where those TVs went at the start of the season, I have no idea. I noticed they said in your report that they don't have the budget for TVs.
At the moment,
where did they go? But where did they go? They were there till the start of this season.
Must have been rentals.
Well, they mysteriously disappeared. They'd been there for years. And it's not that they were broken.
No.
Mysterious.
Who knows?
Maybe it was a rapid state of thefts over the summer.
Show you how much observation I made to the outside of the stadium that I didn't even know they were there.
Anyway, okay, right, well, let's move on. I said it's been a big good pub chat. I said, don't mean to shake either of you down. I'm sure we could go round and round about this. It's clearly a subject that a lot of people feel passionately about, judging by the amount of responses you already had, Dave.
Yep.
The fact we've already just, you know, 20 minutes has just sped by here. So
just one final point.
Yeah.
So this isn't... I've kind of taken the lead on the whole Tirelest End side of things here. I would just like to point out that this isn't about me or what other fans on the forum and explicitly what they want. I have my own ideas, of course I do. I have my own ultimate goal, as it were. You know, the whole idea of this is to draw Reading fans together, to get them all pulled into and pointing in the same direction, heading in the same direction, and sort of leading the way and for a better atmosphere.
Very much agree.
So, you know, please, more feedback. The more feedback, the more suggestions. Even if you think it's going to be common, You know, obviously, I've had a lot of stuff on the PA man. I've had a lot of stuff on safe standing. I've had a lot of stuff on sort of pre-match music and the drummer. Even if it's common, write in.
Wait in numbers.
Exactly.
And I'll forward it, and I'll turn around, and I'll go to the club, and I will say, look. These are the people, this is the number of people that have said this, 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 this and this. This is what they want to happen. Make it happen.
Yeah, fair enough. Right, as I said, TTE Focus Group is the hashtag on Twitter, and send your emails in to thetirelestend@gmail.com. I will make sure each and everyone gets to Dave. Thank you very much, gents. I said good pub chat, and said, and if you want your feedback just on this pub chat or in general, you know, get those tweets coming in to us, you know, using the hashtag TT podcast hashtag. We'll try and read out a few of them next week. In the meantime, lots of people have been emailing in. Not as many as usual, Westy, because you know what happens. Soon as Reading win.
Soon as we're winning, no more.
Soon as Reading win. No, but we do have a few bits of feedback to get to in the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Right, a big thank you to everyone who's got in touch for the mailbag this week using hashtag TTE podcast, to at The Tarlhurst End on Twitter, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com for the emails, and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End. Do appreciate every bit of feedback we get. We try and read out as many as we can, but if you do use that hashtag TTE podcast, it helps us get there a little bit easier. We'll start this week's mailbag with Chris Baker, who says, solid window. Humility shown by the owners to get rid of players that didn't work. Money in, one known quantity in, plus one gamble. Do you agree? Solid window? I think we touched on it a lot of it earlier, but yeah, I disagree with that.
I think we said at the start of the season, it's very difficult for players to come from foreign countries and settle straight away, and it proved to be the point again with the two players that they've just shipped back out. I think they've improved the players that they've replaced, let's put it that way, with the players that they've replaced. So, yeah, again, like we said, when Hector was sold, we made money in that window, we've made money in this window. And if we weaken the squad any, I don't really think so.
On transfers as well, Dave, Daniel Roy Mackay says, do you foresee another summer of transition in and out of the club? Gunter, Williams and Norwood all could leave.
That's a difficult one. I genuinely don't know. I wouldn't be surprised to see Gunter leave. Williams, likewise, he is on, we think he's on a hefty wage, given that he was signed in the Zingarevich days. Transition, no, I don't necessarily think so. I think we're going to see one... Well, we'll certainly see one in, one out in terms of positional. If Gunter leaves, we'll get a right back. If Williams leaves, do we really need another central midfielder? We might get one. Likewise, Norwood. It all depends, really, on what happens between now and the end of the season and if there's any progress. I think if we look like we're making progress, then I think some, you know, certain one, two, maybe or all three will re-sign contracts. If we look like we're stagnating like we have done most of the season, who knows?
I think the interesting thing is if they were to leave, all three of them, we've got a lot of players on loan as well that are all going to leave, and we have half a squad all of a sudden.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of younger players coming through. Obviously, the players that we had high hopes for at the start of the year, the likes of Samuel Fosu, Aaron Cool as well. We've already seen Tishbola coming to make a real impact. Jake Cooper's proving to be a good, solid defender as well. So it is going to be a big summer. I said players like Anton Ferdinand out of contract as well in the summer. So it will be, I think, a summer. I do tend to disagree a little bit, Dave. I think it is going to be a summer of transition. But is it going to be a huge, gigantic overhaul? I don't know. I don't know.
That was needed last season. I think we've got the nucleus of a good squad now.
It's funny. I think they need a player. I think they need a player in each position now going into the summer, though. They're going to need a new... I think they need a new goalkeeper.
Definitely.
Yep.
They're going to need a new centre-back because Hector and Ferdinand are probably out.
Yep.
They're going to need... Maybe midfield isn't the one. Central midfield isn't the one they need. They might need a new winger, and they're going to need another striker because Vidra's going to be off in the summer. Yeah.
And they might need a right back if Gunter happens to leave as well.
So there's key positions to look at. Chris Hartley has an observation on Saturday's game. He said, did anyone notice the team doing crossing drills in the warm-up? Do you think that helped us score two goals from crosses into the box?
Well, it did, and they did, so maybe it did.
Yeah.
No, I didn't, because I was in the Jazz Caf until about 14:55.
Well, all I can say is that what Brian said earlier, you know, he talked about changing his pre-match routine to try and improve the fast start. So, and it's his job and the job of the coaches to point and look at things and see what they can do to help. So maybe it did, maybe it didn't. I mean, the quality of the crosses was certainly good. Gunter's cross for the final goal was very good.
Yeah, and it's something that he doesn't normally do. He normally gets in the position to put in a good cross and then puts in a poor cross.
Yeah.
Because he just kind of... Lofts it in, what Steve Coppell used to call a little butterfly cross, which is sort of floating with little kind of
wings. Defenders love them.
Stacey makes the point. He says, with the recent tactics Brian has implemented, do you think he's learned a lot and he's more tactical than we first thought when he was reappointed?
No.
No, I don't think that either.
I don't think so. You look back to the early days, he employed certainly a 4-2-3-1. He played 4-4-2, a 4-5-1. He played a number of different formations. Certainly in the first 6 months to 8 months, when he had the personnel to do that back in 2010. Since the subsequent years, he was a lot more rigid with his formation because he had somewhat more limited
players.
More limited players. Players who were there for a set position, and they played a 4-4-2. I don't think to suggest that maybe he's not as tactically, or he's more tactically astute than he was back then, let's not forget, and I keep banging this drum, he changed the style of play three times.
I agree. I think it'd be silly to say that he hasn't learned anything since he left Reading. I mean, you're sure that he's got away and done his research and he's watched more football and he's probably picked up a few ideas, but every manager you'd like to think slowly evolves and grows as they watch football.
Again, the best thing he'd done when he came was get Roberts here, was a big target man up front, and that's pretty much what he's done now in getting Kermigan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, moving on. And this is a bit of a bugbear. We had a chat about this in the interview. Brian Davis. Do you have faith in Reading fans to come up with equally good or better songs for new or current players after the departure of Sarah Blackman? No more do, 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 do. I've done it wrong. I think it's...
I think that was a better version than the original.
And bang, bang, clap, clap, player name. I've done those horrible injustices. I know what he's talking about, but in my head right now, I can't think of the tunes. Can you?
No. But no, we don't think they're going to come up with any more quality songs, I don't think.
Yeah, this is a bugbear. And I brought this up in a podcast earlier this season or late last year. And me and Dave are having a chat about it now. Reading, they're so limited now. And that has got a lot to do with what you were mentioning, Westy, the fact that they can't congregate and get together and come up with songs. But as well, and what is driving me mad, is that Reading fans these days seem far more preoccupied with taunting the away fans than they do with backing their own team. And it drives me up the wall. I'm thinking, why are you here to do that? If you just want to go and have an argument with someone, can't you just get in the pub on a Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, but that's not safe, is it? There's not a load of police and stewards in front of you.
This is all part of my, to coin a John Keane phrase, my modus operandi with the whole focus group atmosphere creation thing, is that what I would really, really like to see and hear are Reading fans who, you know, chant away, who, whether they're unique chants or not, I don't care, so long as there's an atmosphere and there's a rhythm to it. But I really want to see and hear Reading fans use their energy to get behind. You know, they're all too preoccupied on Saturday, noticeably, and I do notice it when I sat in Y25. But as I say, I sat in the Upper West, it was all the more obvious to me that as soon as we, you know, up until the moment we scored, there was nothing. It's absolutely nothing from the East Stand. The moment we scored, Y25 and 26, all they were doing was pointing at the Walsall fans and giving it the big un. And it's, why? You've just scored, celebrate the goal, take the mick a little bit, maybe, but get behind the boys. Get behind the players.
You know?
And don't, from that moment onwards, it was just, you know, it's the same old drivel now. There's no uniqueness to it.
What, like the one we had this week with I See You on Jeremy Kyle? I thought that was original. Told you we need to know.
I've heard that before. I have heard it before.
Yeah, it's been done.
But do you know what? I said to you both just, you know, before we recorded, why would you even admit to watching Jeremy Kyle?
Do you know who sums this up for me and is the biggest culprit of this? And I'm sure he's got good intentions at heart. I don't know the bloke personally and I can't comment on him. But the guy who's there in shorts, he's right by the away fans, and every week, without fail, you'll get something about... The away fans will chant something about him being overweight, to which Y25 and Y26 will come back with, he's your sister.
That's just not funny. Why? He's not.
He's waiting for it to happen as well. It's like every week. He's giving it the big one.
He lives on it, doesn't he? Let's face it. Yeah. It's like the Geordie used to have his top off and minus 10.
Why is that guy not using his energy and his clear enthusiasm to get behind a certain player? Now, it does help if fans get behind a certain player. You look at Pavel Pogrebniak, who clearly really appreciated the time he had in Reading. And I think part of that was down to the fact he actually had a fairly... I mean, it wasn't the most unique song, but the big effing Russian. It was kind of cute seeing it was something for him.
It was his.
It helped because Russian fans, and he's said this since he's gone back, Russian fans don't always appreciate the big number 9 or in case number 7 lump up front, whereas British fans do.
Can anyone tell me, what is the song for Jordan Obita? What is the song for Chris Gunter? Jake Cooper doesn't have a song. Does Michael Hector really have a song? Come up with something. Stuff you remember things that M-U-R-T-Y... David Kitson, what a bargain. Again, they don't have to be the most original things, but they help build a relationship between fans and
we've
players.
We've had a few that's been rerun, haven't we? Like Jamie Curran, what a bargain.
Every song's going to be a rerun.
I know, I'm not saying that, but at least they had a song.
Yeah.
Now it's very, like you say, it's very poor, to be honest.
So, in answer to your question, Brian, no, I don't have But then again, I suppose I shouldn't throw stones because I'm not the one that's... I don't stand up and start chants, so maybe I should.
A lot of the problem, going back to the article that I wrote last week, a lot of the problem stems from a lot of the people, a lot of the fans who have who used to sort of create the new and more unique chants. They've left the club. They're long gone. They don't support the club. Well, whether they support the club or not, but they don't sit there anymore. Because the club have almost pandered towards the whole family and sort of influx of modern day consumerism, and they've left that type of fan behind.
We feel it even as a website on the Tyler Stand. Now I know, and a lot of people, well, not a lot, it comes up every now and again. Would you get guys who wrote the whiff on? And I say to them, I'd love to get some of the because. You know, people will say, oh, did you have a rivalry or something with a whiff? Like, no, I loved it. I loved buying that fanzine. Mm. I thought it was great. I thought it was witty. Yeah, sometimes it's a little bit close to the knuckle when I don't think we could get away with it on the Tyler Stand all the time. But I would love that sort of, I can't describe it, but that type of fan to get engaged.
We're all fans. There's no rivalry, yeah. Is there? We're all
that element, it's to what Dave's saying. We've never had that really approach us. You know, we've not had that type of fan really try and get on board. And I think what Dave's saying is true. I think we're losing a lot of that generation, a lot of that creativity in and around the football club.
It's another thing I spoke about many a time. Sort of when I was a kid, there was a load of us who used to go football. Now it's down to me and my dad. You know, we used to be a group of 20, and it's just died off.
Another thing. Again, I haven't mentioned this, but I think I was thinking about it on the car on the way in. I listen to Jack FM Berkshire on the way in to and from work, and there's a lot of old stuff on there, and certainly there's a lot of stuff that gets played. That you just think there's a football chant to that,
yeah.
You know, like Go West by Pet Shop Boys. There's a football chant to that. It's obvious.
Yeah.
And a number of other songs from back in the 90s and the 80s. You know, one of the popular ones is Depeche Mode at the moment.
Well, my most popular one was Boom Boom Boom. Let Me Hear You Say Swales.
There we go. There's another one. Who else has ever had that? You know, obviously, we'd need Steve Swales back. Facebook friend, by the way. Bye, Saki. Again, a lot of the music nowadays.
Marty Quinn. We've had that before. Yeah. We've played that back, haven't we?
Well, we could do.
Oh, the Mighty Quinn.
Yeah. Y25 on Saturday. That's going to start.
Yeah.
A lot of the music in this day and age, it's sort of Pop Idol or X Factor generation, and you know, there's nothing that's created that's really truly original. And,
yeah.
You know, a band or a group that you or an individual artist that you can really look at and think, there's someone that I can actually put words to. You know?
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, yeah. I do. It's very hard to put words to Ellie Goulding songs on the terraces.
Yeah, or Adele, to be
or
fair.
Or Adele, yeah. Well, maybe with some of the football we've been watching for Reading, Adele becomes more and more relevant. Right.
Manufactured drivel.
We're in danger, gents, we're in danger of becoming those three grumpy old men on the podcast. So let's move on to something a bit more positive and something that I like, a tweet I like. From Jeff Hallett, Wimble like this one. What is our win ratio with Stephen Quinn in the team? No debate as to whether he should be in the side. I've done the research, Jeff. The answer is, with Stephen Quinn in the side, we've played 16, won 8, drawn 4, lost 4, for a win ratio of 50%. Without him, I haven't written it down, but the win ratio drops down to 38%.
Yeah, Marty Quinn, as we suggested earlier.
So we are 12% better with Stephen Quinn in the side. I see no you know, all bias aside, I can't understand why he's not playing every week. I know he's dealt with injuries in recent weeks, but that aside, it'd be my first name on the team sheet.
It's very difficult though in midfield, isn't it? If you're going to play with wingers, then there's no real role for him.
Oh, he's playing out on the left at the start of the season, doing perfectly well.
No, he has. I'm not saying that. But if he's going to play the normal McDermott way with two quick wingers, then he doesn't really fit into that mould.
In the middle.
I thought he was excellent left back, to be honest. I thought he was brilliant there. So, yeah, he's a good player. He's one of these players that can play anywhere, which tells you how good he is. But at the moment, in central midfield, you'd be hard pushed to put him in a two.
Right. Two final tweets. One's an email. The first one is a tweet. It comes from Andy Walker. He says, has the smartphone application Periscope changed the face of Transfer Deadline Day forever? To that, I'll simply refer you to Jacob South-Klein's Bushwatch Periscope update. If you've no idea what Periscope is, it's basically an app that lets you live video record. So it's like people can see what you see in real time and then they can replay it. So there you go.
Oh, okay.
And I think it has. I mean, with all social media, isn't it? It's... You used to have to wait to the Evening Post to come out at you know, 5-6 o'clock to find out what had happened on deadline day, or you went on teletext.
I'm glad you, to be fair, I'm actually glad that you you described what Periscope was, because I'm just sat here thinking, what on earth?
Oh, I never had a clue either, to be honest.
Yeah, it's, as I said, it's all things. Again, with technology and things like that now, doing a transfer deal is so hard. And, you know, I love what JSK does on deadline day, but I can imagine Nick Hammond finds him infuriating.
Yes.
He's just trying to get his deals done, and he's got this guy who he knows is all over social media, and he's got a massive following now. But at the same point, he can't go over to him and say, like, get out of here, because he's then seen as, like, the Grinch.
Yeah, that's right. It's a no-win situation for him.
So it's very difficult. But yeah, I mean, deadline day is changed forever. I do wonder if it'll get to a point where it kind of eats itself. I think clubs, we pointed out right at the start of the show, didn't we? Clubs are getting their deals done a lot earlier now.
Yeah, well, they have to, because sometimes it doesn't happen. And I suppose it's better to get it done earlier than it is to leave it to the last minute and it fall through.
Absolutely right. And the final bit of feedback this week comes from Lucy Taylor, who emailed in. She emailed in ahead of last week's show, when her first point was about Orlando Saar teaming up with Matty Vidra. So unfortunately, that now can't happen. But a second point I thought I'd read out. And she says, when you covered your Oh Yeah Reading 11, you mentioned Steve Mortone.
Steve-O.
I was a huge Steve-O fan, so much so I met him on several occasions. It made it my superstition ritual to speak to him when he was warming up at Elm Park. I even got to interview him for the Young Royals and became good friends. In 2010, my family visited Melbourne, where he was a goalkeeper coach at Melbourne Victory. He kindly put complimentary tickets for us at reception, gave us a ground tour and took us to the players' bar. Then invited us back to his house to meet his family and have a barbecue. I appreciate he wasn't the world's best, but like Mertz, he always had time for fans and gave it his all. He's now running a goalkeeping coach in goalkeeping coaching school.
Yep, I know. Certainly that last bit I know, because again, I'm going to say it again, Facebook friends. Yeah. I like Steve Mertone.
Same there.
I liked him as a goalkeeper. Very unlucky in many ways, with injury, certainly the beginning of 97-98. But then I suppose that gave Nicky Hammond his chance as well. In many ways, fair play, Lucy. I can't really personally add much to it, other than I do engage with Steve occasionally on Facebook. He's genuinely comes across as a genuinely nice chap, very family oriented, and looks as though his goalkeeper coaching school is incredibly successful.
Yep, and I can't disagree with any of that.
No, well done to him. It's a lovely thing to do.
Yep, much like Simon Shepherd, who we interviewed on this podcast, who's now out coaching in the States. So it's nice to see a lot of these Reading goalkeepers are going on to stay in the game and make an impact in the next generation.
Yeah, it's good to see that he hasn't let his career slip through his fingers like he did most of the time when he's in goal.
Oh, come on. He was a decent keeper.
The Shepherd, I'm talking.
Oh, Shepherd, yeah. Yeah, wow. Bless you, Shep. He admitted he had problems. Go back and listen to the interview we did with him. I can't remember. It was about 40 episodes
ago. At least he could laugh about it.
It was very, he did. Very humble about it, to be honest with you.
He was. Right, anyway, thank you very much to everyone who's got in touch with us this week. Again, at the Tarlest End on Twitter, using hashtag TTE podcast, thetarlestend@gmail.com or facebook.com/thetarlestend. We'll wrap up this show by looking ahead to two big championship fixtures.
The Tarlhurst End podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
So, time for any other business. And after a quick between segments discussion of Davina McCall, it's time for us to look at two championship fixtures for Reading this week. No FA Cup action for a while. It's back to the grind of the championship. And a week, I know we've said it before, guys, that, you know, it's a pivotal week and our hopes hinge. And we had on the last week's show, we, you know, myself and Johnny said that the season was effectively over. But this really is it, isn't it? If Reading can't get at least 4 points and really six for these games against Ipswich and Wolves, you can put a fork in the season, can't you, in terms of playoffs?
Pretty much.
Yeah, we've got three home games on the bounce now, haven't we?
Yeah.
A league
after, on Saturdays, yeah.
Yeah, after this game, yeah. Again, you've got to be looking to win all them if you have any chance of getting in the playoffs.
It's five home games on the trot at home, isn't it, on
yeah.
Saturday?
Yeah.
Which is, I don't think that's actually happened.
It's quite unique, yeah.
Yeah, we did have a question about that. Can someone say the last time that's happened, and I've got no idea how you'd find that
don't
out.
Don't know if it has.
Our Strap, if he's still around.
The Strap is still around.
Yeah, hopefully he would know the answer. If you visit the Hobnob and call out his name, he very occasionally answers.
Nigel Meek, yep.
Yeah.
Nigel, if you're listening.
Yep, yeah, he has written for us as well on the Tarlhurst End a few years ago. So, yeah, hats off to your Strap. Anyway, meanwhile, Ipswich, they're 10 points clear of Reading at the moment. They're 8th in the Championship table. They've not had a good run of late. They've only won one out of the last five in all competitions, including going out of the FA Cup to Pompey. So not great form for them. They got thumped 3-0 by Birmingham in the last Championship game. But it is a team that's been in and around the playoffs now for most of the last two seasons. Mick McCarthy's their manager, so a guy that knows all about this league. Portman Road has been pretty kind to us in recent years. I remember a good 3-2 win up there. couple of years ago that actually kind of sparked the run to the Championship.
Yeah, we're 2-0 down, 2-1 down going into the 90th minute, weren't we?
Yeah, so hopefully the same can happen again. But Westie, you know, looking at that team, looking at Ipswich's form, is this a game that you can see Reading walking away with all 3 points from?
Yeah, the thing is with Reading, I think they can walk away with 3 points every week. It just doesn't seem to happen. Ipswich always seem to finish in the same sort of position, don't they? Between 7th and 10th every single year. Or whether that's just in my mind or it really does happen. They're always there or thereabouts, but they're eternal bottlers and they end up...
Except for last year when they made the playoffs.
Yeah, they did, but they're eternal bottlers, aren't they? They're always around there, but they never really do it. And again, they're just a steady Championship side. And again, if they can be 8th, then there's no reason Reading can't beat them.
Yeah, notice Jay Tabb is conspicuous by his absence from their team sheet, right?
How old is Jay Tabb now? He must be in his 30s, isn't he? Easily.
Don't know, putting me on the spot. I'll have a look in just a minute. But Dave, again, they've got to go and win. And it's got to the point now where what I don't want to see from Reading is what we saw last year was when they basically shut down the league campaign as soon as they started getting through the FA Cup rounds. And they basically went so far off the boil in those league games that it was just embarrassing at times. And what I'm desperate to hope is that Reading, we don't see the same again starting Tuesday night.
Yeah. Hopefully Saturday can sort of kickstart the season. All right, it's only a 4-0 win against Walsall. But, you know, it's very difficult to look at it. And, you know, you see you're in 15th place and you look at it and you think, you know, you see here, you know, Ipswich, they're in 8th, they're 7th place, but they're 10 points. You know, you've got to close the gap. You know, to keep that dream alive. And we know McDermott can do it in the second half of seasons. He's proven that he's done it before and go on runs. But, you know, he's got to start at some point. You know, and he's got to start now. They've got to really start, you know, bucking their ideas up, putting in that extra bit of effort. You know, just to, you know, strain that extra bit of sinew to win that loose ball, and go and get the 3 points and 6 points in these two games. It's got to start. He's got to start now.
And the away form as well. I think we're still looking at, was it September, October, Bristol City? It's the last time we went away from home.
Yeah, it's got to come. Again, whenever I look at whenever we do these shows, and a lot of people won't notice that Wimmer was writes out the team, so we know who's in their squad, who was the week before. I very rarely look at a side and think, "Oh, I wouldn't mind him in Reading side. I wouldn't mind him in the Reading side." I just don't understand why they can't turn a lot of these sides over. It was like yesterday I was watching MK Dons Chelsea, and you think, "How the hell did that lot beat Reading? They were a shambles. That was all over the place. Mm. They didn't get anywhere near the ball. Chelsea, I don't know, a good side, but God, it made them look like world beaters."
Yeah,
Reading couldn't beat them.
What would you do with the team? Gents, obviously it's a team that's just won 4-0 against Walsall. Obviously Aaron Tischbowler's not going to feature. He has got an injury. So Michael Hector came in and replaced him in the week.
Fairly simple for me. I think, do you know what? It could be slightly controversial here. Because of the size and the physical strength that Ipswich possess, I'd be inclined to put Michael Hector and play him where in the Tischbowler role. It's a controversial move. Drop Danny Williams and I'll play Jan Kermigan.
I 100% agree with you, actually. It's exactly what I would do. Can't say anything more than that.
I don't think it'll happen.
No.
Because Williams actually played reasonably well on Saturday, and McDermott doesn't like changing a winning team. I mean, let's face it, we just won 4-0.
Mm.
So I don't think anything will change from the start. But that's what I would do. But, yeah. You know, you're playing with human emotions. You know, Danny Williams has just played reasonably well, scored and played a key part in one of the goals. Very influential role that he played. And if you take him out of the team, you know, and he's probably immediately thinking, well... What the hell have I done wrong?
Well, not only that, I mean, the last game against Sheffield Wednesday at home, when he went in the centre of the pitch, it changed the game.
Yeah.
So I think it's very difficult to take Williams out of the midfield because the other's a bit too much of a muchness, for my liking.
Yeah, I would kind of like to see George Evans get a shot, maybe ahead of Hector, to see if he can do that defensive role. But obviously, you know, Hector's came in and did a good job on Saturday.
It depends how you're looking at the game. If you're still looking at the game thinking we could make the playoffs, then you're going to play what you believe to be your strongest side. If you're not, then you might give Evans a run in midfield.
We shall see. Then after that, it is Wolves at home on Saturday. Again, since beating Reading, they've done pretty well. They've won 3, lost 2, drawn 1. They have lost their top goal scorer, though. Benik Afobe's gone to Bournemouth. Adam Lafondre getting a run in the team in his place. So they're a team that, again, a bit like Reading, sort of harbour those outside playoff hopes. But, again, have they got the consistency in since losing Afobe? Have they got the bodies to do it?
No, they're another side. You look at them and you think... It's not a great side, you know what I mean? They ain't got amazing players. I mean, Lafondre and Henry, that was here years ago, and I didn't think that was great when I was here. So, that's another team, especially away from home. When we played them up there, I thought we should have beat them.
Oh, they were all over them.
Yeah,
no way they should have lost that game.
Yeah, so they're another team that Reading should be looking to beat.
Yeah, and I think I generally think we'll do it comfortably this time. We'll
okay.
Get a bit of revenge. Although that's what something that we need to be wary of is the revenge factor for the 5-1 defeat that Ipswich had. Stepping back 30
seconds. Very true. Very true. Okay, well, it's time to put the money where the mouth is, gents. Prediction league time. Obviously, FA Cup games do not count. So it's as you were at last week's show with Charles on top on 21, myself in second on 17, Johnny on 15, Westy on 12, and Dave is on 8. I can tell you that Johnny has already predicted 3-1 to Ipswich, and Charles has predicted 2-1 to Ipswich. So, Dave, as you are bottom of the table, I'll let you go first.
Looking at our record there, certainly since we got promoted in 2-3, I've just written it all down. We've won 4, drawn 2, lost 4. 1-1.
Okay. Oh, J-Tab is 32, by the way.
Okay. Well, I thought he was a bit older than that. Okay. I'm going to go, since everyone's gone defeats or draw, I'm going to go for a Reading win. So let's say...
What happened to you being negative?
Well, I can't now. I'm trying to win the league.
Okay.
2-1 Reading.
2-1 Reading. 1-2. I'm going to think... I think Reading are going to sneak this as well. I'm going to say they're going to win this 1-0. There we go. So you've avoided the Tarlest End curse, everyone. We've not all predicted a positive result, so we can hold no blame should this go badly. Do you guys want to give your predictions for Wolves now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Start with you then, Westy.
3-0 already.
Wow. Okay. Dave?
We don't have a great record at home against them at the Medeski. Again, just writing it down, looking at it. 1-1, drawn 2, lost 2 in the league, include the playoffs as well. We lost 3. Two nil
to Reading.
Yes, yeah.
I like the way you talked that up, saying what a bad record we had, and then went for a win.
Yeah, and
we've got
the eternal support.
A bit of symmetry. I genuinely think that we're going to beat them.
Yeah, they're poor.
Well, I'm going to be positive as well. I'm going to go for back-to-back 1-0 wins for Reading.
I hope you're right.
There you go. So Ali Alhabsi with back-to-back clean sheets. That'll be a rare one.
That is a prediction indeed.
I hope he's wrong. Yeah, back-to-back 4-0 wins.
Oh, there you go. Oh, uber positive. Right, that wraps up the show.
Back to back, should I say.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
That wraps up the show for this week. A big thank you to everyone who's got in touch. Again, please keep those TTE, hashtag TTE focus group thoughts coming in for Dave. I said it doesn't have to be this week. If you need a week or so to compose your thoughts, but the more we get in, the better it'll be. And obviously keep the hashtag TTE podcast, general thoughts coming in for next week's show. We'll be back again, probably Monday, maybe Tuesday, maybe Sunday, who knows? But it'll be a cast. I can tell you that it's probably going to be Monday night. And I think Rob Langham from the Two Unfortunates will be joining us as well. Plus probably one of these two people will hold some sort of battle royale before we leave.
Retrobates that we are.
Indeed. to see which of you two survives the cut. But yeah, so stay tuned for that. Again, apologies. There was no podcast extra on Friday. Charles had a poorly baby, so nothing can be done there, unfortunately. Between sicknesses, well, yeah, between sicknesses and manager sackings this week, the Tarlest End podcast section has been a bit unfortunate with things coming up. So,
we've got 2 unfortunates coming. So there we go.
That was an amazing link.
Indeed. Right, thank you very much. Everyone is in touch. In the meantime, I said hopefully 6 points. In the meantime, come on, you ass.
Social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@ The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/ The Tarlhurst End.